My own investigators have reported to me that many doctors in the region east of Fort Knox are baffled lately by a large increase in the incidence of cancers of all types.
And on November 7, 1975, just a week ago, the government itself released statistics that show the same thing. The National Cancer Institute announced that so far this year, the cancer death rate nationwide is up by 5.2%. This is five times the rate of increase that has prevailed over a period of many years, and they frankly admit that they are at a loss to explain it. But buried in those same official government statistics is a regional breakdown, and the east central states containing Fort Knox and the area east of it shows an astronomical 17% to 18% increase. But before I go on, there's something I feel I must make clear. And I am not just sitting back and saying, well, here's something sensational to talk about. Any such callous attitude on my part would be impossible. It so happens that my beloved father and other members of my family are in my childhood home of Huntington, West Virginia, smack in the path of the Fort Knox radioactive killer fog. They are among the millions of people who have already been exposed to the first whiffs of plutonium poison, and I fear for their lives if nothing is done to stop this leakage, which is steadily accelerating. And the feeling I have for them carries over to millions of others, men, women, and innocent little children who are in the same boat, all because of the insane efforts of the Rockefeller brothers to seize power at any cost and by any means. Some will also say, no doubt, that I shouldn't tell you things like this, because it will cause alarm. But my friends, this is something to be alarmed about. It's no joke. If I did not tell you, I would be just like a civil defense official who, warned of an imminent attack by enemy bombing aircraft, would say, I'm not going to turn on the air raid sirens because that might frighten people. But you may say, wouldn't the government warn us and take the necessary measures to correct such a situation at Fort Knox? My answer is no. The government is stonewalling it. And up till now, major newspapers, news magazines, and the TV and radio networks are also sitting on this life and death story with one exception. 2 days ago, on November 12, 1975, the Louisville Courier-Journal broke the Fort Knox plutonium story on its front page in the best traditions of newspaper reporting. Their courageous exercise of free speech, guaranteed by the First Amendment to our Constitution, may make it impossible even for the Rockefeller-controlled major media to ignore the situation indefinitely. In any case, top business and financial people here and abroad are being kept aware of the Fort Knox fiasco thanks to specialized newsletters of all kinds. While the major media try to brainwash you with slanted news and distract you with all kinds of entertainment, these newsletters tell what is really going on. One of the best of these, which began informing its readers about the strange goings-on at Fort Knox over a year ago, is Myers Finance and Energy, edited at Post Office Box 5531, Station A, Calgary, Alberta, Canada. In his October 31, 1975 issue, Mr. Myers caps off a story on Fort Knox by quoting the following letter of my able associate, Mr. Ed Durrell, to the acting director of the Mint, quote, I now ask you for the record, please, to confirm or deny the existence of the Central Core Vault at the U.S. Bullion Depository at Fort Knox, Kentucky. I refer to the single, large, centrally located underground chamber serviced by elevator, unquote. As Mr. Myers asks in his newsletter, quote, "Why can't the acting director of the Mint answer simply yes or no? The whole nation is asking a question. Why won't they answer?" Unquote. For two months now, we have received a dead silence from the government. Every one of their past evasions has confirmed and deepened their guilt, and they know it, so they are stonewalling it. What then is Congress doing? Is it too just writing off 9 million people rather than sound the alarm and get the deadly situation at Fort Knox corrected? Yes. Listen. As just pointed out, the United States government has to this day never admitted the existence of the Central Corps Vault, which was not mentioned to the 100-odd visitors of Fort Knox last year on September 23, 1974. To admit its existence would, all by itself, prove that the so-called gold inspection visit by congressman and newsman was a total fraud, and also the so-called audit done by the GAO and the Treasury together. And since the Central Corps Vault is where the leaking plutonium poison is, they want desperately to keep you from knowing that the vault exists. I'm now going to reveal previously confidential discussions which have been held between Congressman Otis Pike, Chairman of the House Intelligence Investigating Committee, and myself and associates. I'm making it public now because Congressman Pike himself has breached this confidentiality in the worst possible way by turning over our information without our consent to the Church Committee in the Senate. As I explained last month, Senator Church is already sitting on the plutonium poison story while he plays games with you and me. And now, for whatever reasons, Congressman Otis Pike, too, has let America down. In mid-September, I held private discussions with Congressman Pike about the situation at Fort Knox. At that time, I did not yet know about the plutonium poison stored there, but I did know that the CIA and FBI were tied in with the theft of America's gold from Fort Knox on behalf of the Rockefeller brothers. He appeared to be genuinely interested and courageous as well, a quality which has virtually disappeared from the United States Congress today. But his major sticking point, which he came back to time and time again, was the Central Corps Vault at Fort Knox. Its existence had never been admitted by the government, so Congressman Pike could not believe that it did exist. The number one requirement that he placed on us was therefore that we prove that the Central Corps Vault does exist. So on September 26, 1975, we met again with Congressman Pike and two of his top staffers in his office, and this time we had with us no less than a former commanding general of Fort Knox, Lieutenant General John L. Ryan, Jr., United States Army retired. General Ryan commanded Fort Knox from 1956 to 1959. He had also served two earlier tours at Fort Knox, the first being in the late 1930s when he was placed in charge of the Army contingent that was assigned to help store the nation's gold in the bullion depository for the very first time. All the gold was put in the Central Corps Vault at that time, having been constructed specifically for that purpose. The many small jail cell-like storage compartments seen by the Fort Knox visitors last year were also in existence at that time, but were not intended for the storage of gold, but for other valuables. General Ryan stated that for the entire duration of his long experience with Fort Knox, the gold was always kept in the Central Corps Vault. He also said he was mystified as to why the gold would ever have been removed from the Central Corps Vault and placed in the small jail cell compartments on the levels above, which offer a much lower degree of security. Congressman Pike then asked us for certain further information, including specific connections between the Fort Knox affair and the intelligence community, which is within the jurisdiction of Congressman Pike's committee. We agreed to provide what he asked, and it was in following up the connection between Fort Knox and the intelligence industry that my sources informed me of the hideous plutonium poison in the bullion depository at Fort Knox. But when we returned to Congressman Pike, ready to provide witnesses and other evidence about the plutonium and other things, Mr. Pike's response had changed. It is now the classical position that is always used to say goodbye on Capitol Hill. Quote, We're too busy to work on this." Unquote. Our information given to him in confidence has been unceremoniously dumped on that dead letter office, the Church Committee, and Congressman Pike's opportunity to stand head, shoulders, and waist above everyone else in Washington by simply doing his duty has been forfeited. Only an informed, aroused public can now move Congress in the right direction. One of the unanswered questions when I recorded AUDIO LETTER No. 5 last month was why this insane radioactive plutonium poison was ever made at all. Now I can tell you. During the early and mid-1960s, over 200 pounds of this super poison was made for the CIA and FBI intelligence communities. It was processed in four plants, two in Louisville, Kentucky, one in North Dakota, and one in Southern California. One thing it is handy for, in very small doses, is putting troublesome individuals out of the way. But why so much plutonium poison? For political blackmail, my friends. In 1966, the CIA divided up this poison and sent about 60 pounds to each of four Latin American countries, Peru, Panama, Bolivia, and Argentina. There, threats were made that it would be used to contaminate United States' planned and built water aqueduct systems. Can you imagine? Unless certain political and economic actions were taken. In Argentina, this successfully laid the foundation for the return to power of the Perón group, and then the poison was no longer needed there. And so it was returned to the United States in 1968. But a problem arose. Where to store this illegal nuclear poison? CIA agents within the Treasury, however, knew that the Central Core Vault at the Fort Knox Bullion Depository was being emptied of gold and suggested that it be stored there. This was done with all but 12 grams, less than half an ounce, which the CIA extracted from one canister to experiment with. This 12-gram sample of the plutonium poison, whose full effects still were not fully understood at that time, was taken to the White Sands Proving Grounds in New Mexico for evaluation purposes. During the experiments there, about 3 grams accidentally leaked into an underground water supply which was being used by 12 families in that sparsely settled area. All of them died quickly from the poison, and the CIA mounted an elaborate cover-up, burying those innocent victims secretly. Perhaps you will recall, in fact, some strange news items several years ago about the sudden disappearance of some ranch folk out west, a disappearance that never was explained. Well, now you know what happened. At about the same point in time, by the way, AT&T was involved in the so-called Mole-Hole Project to drill deep into the Earth's crust for reasons which were never made clear publicly. Its purpose, I can reveal, was to reach a hypothetical underground world river, so-called, and contaminate it with the plutonium poison to deny its use to everyone. After spending vast amounts of taxpayers' money, it was abandoned as an impractical project. Insane? Yes. Fiction? No. The CIA agent who was put in charge of getting the poison to the Latin American countries under cover of his multinational company was named Harold Leroy White. Once he became fully aware of the details of the project, however, he became disgusted and sick at heart and decided to go to, guess who, Senator Barry Goldwater with the story. He arranged to see Goldwater, but died on the way, apparently because his intentions became known to the wrong people. Whether Goldwater knew what White wanted to see him about is not clear from my information so far, but it does seem strange that we keep running into Senator Goldwater in all of this. First there was the crucial Chapter 12 of the unpublished Tatum manuscript on Fort Knox, which Goldwater obtained from Tatum's widow after Tatum's death under suspicious circumstances. Goldwater has never released the manuscript, even though I challenged him to do so in my monthly AUDIO LETTER No. 1 for June 1975. Now there is the Harold Leroy White case. Did Goldwater know what was afoot or not? And now he has come out in strong public opposition to any further investigation of the CIA and other United States intelligence agencies. What's going on here, Senator Goldwater? Since I first revealed the presence and leakage of the radioactive plutonium-239 superpoison in the Central Core Vault at Fort Knox, I've been astonished by the failure of some people to stop and realize what it means. My associates and I were hoping to obtain a court injunction to open the vault and prove that the gold is gone. But now, God forbid, the whole depository should be abandoned immediately and covered up with a pyramid of lead, cement, and stone, whatever it takes to shut off its deadly contents from the environment before its effects become a runaway disaster. It will be a pyramid with a poison core for thousands of years. But that is apparently the best that can be done now. Topic number 3. If the Bullion Depository at Fort Knox is indeed abandoned and entombed under a giant pyramid to shut it off from the world, it would be an ironic symbol of the miscarriage of Rockefeller power, and ultimately a symbol of the self-destruction which the four Rockefeller brothers are bringing upon themselves. If you would take out a $1 bill and look at the back as I talk, you will see what I mean by this irony. On the left side you will see the pyramid and eye symbol that today signifies the power of the Rockefellers. They did not invent this symbol, but in 1933 they appropriated it as their own property. In that year, their puppet president, Franklin D. Roosevelt, came to power, and this symbol appeared on our money for the very first time, and it's been there ever since. Many people attach patriotic and religious meanings to the various parts of this symbol, but that is not what it means to the Rockefellers who put it there. A 1776 inscribed at the base of the pyramid refers not to the founding of our Republic, but to May Day, 1776, the day celebrated today by the Communists and Radical Socialists the world over. The pyramid itself symbolizes the pyramid of power. At the bottom are you and I, the general public, and in successively smaller layers above us are fewer and fewer people with more and more power. Floating above the pyramid, seemingly unattached to it, is the very hub of power, the essence of which is secrecy, no visible connection with the rest of the pyramid, and spying, symbolized by the mysterious eye with a view in all directions. The words Novus Ordo Seclorum on the banner underneath mean New Order of the Ages, or freely translated, New Deal. Little understood symbols like this are one way our secret rulers have of signaling to one another the progress of their grab for power. They are all around us today, even on postage stamps, and you should watch for them. The same pyramid symbol often appears over Walter Cronkite's shoulder these days when he discusses the economy on CBS TV News. It is also embodied as a triangle at the top of the headboard and footboard of Nelson Rockefeller's celebrated $35,000 bed, which was designed by an artist of satanic symbols, Max Ernst. Another symbol to watch for on Walter Cronkite's TV news is the Rockefeller Road to the Bicentennial emblem, showing a road heading into the center of a circle of stars. Count the stars. They're not 13, but 10 stars in the circle, standing for the 10 new states which are to replace the 50 we now have under the new Rockefeller Constitution. The shakeup of the Ford cabinet over the weekend of November the 2nd, coinciding with Rockefeller's announcement that he will not run with Ford or as Vice President in 1976, is a clear signal that Ford's remaining days in office are distinctly numbered. CIA Director Colby and Defense Secretary Schlesinger were fired at Nelson Rockefeller's behest. But these unpopular moves were hung like an albatross around President Ford's neck by having him say, "I wanted my guys." At the same time, Henry Kissinger was ostensibly taken down a peg. I've always warned that Kissinger would have to go as soon as Nelson, his longtime boss, made his takeover move, because their egos will not permit them to actually work together without terrible friction. Kissinger knows this too, and is a little Hitler waiting in the wings under the illusion that he may be able to displace Nelson Rockefeller and become our dictator himself under the provisions of the new Rockefeller Constitution. But he has already begun to find out otherwise, and in all likelihood will be successfully removed from the scene regardless of what moves he may make against Nelson. What is already being called the Sunday Night Massacre by some of the barking dogs of the Rockefeller media is only a prelude to bigger shake-ups ahead. Once the onus of the coming crash is firmly stuck to President Ford, the stage will have been set for him to retire from the scene, voluntarily or otherwise, to be replaced by Nelson Rockefeller, riding out on his white horse to save the nation, just like FDR did in 1933. As it stands now, and please remember that they often change their plans when they are spotlighted, the timetable is as follows. On or about November 20, 1975, New York enters another crisis on the way to default, which will probably come while Ford is off drinking tea in China. Also on November 20, Ronald Reagan, the consummate actor who is Nelson Rockefeller's good friend and America's most two-faced Trojan horse, will make an announcement about his own candidacy. On or about December 20, 1975, Nelson Rockefeller now plans to publicly take the reins of the presidency from the floundering President Ford, the new Herbert Hoover. Ford's image is already in the process of being torn to shreds in a systematic campaign now underway. On January 20, 1976, President Nelson Rockefeller expects to deliver his first State of the Union message, which is now being written secretly, and electrify Congress and the nation as he proposes the writing of a new Constitution for America. He will speak of the moment as a solemn one in the nation's experience, a time when the past is being conditioned to the future, and when a law fundamental to all other laws must again be created as it was by our founders in another time of national trial. For the remainder of the Rockefeller scenario, ending with our acceptance of the new Constitution by national referendum on rigged voting machines, I refer you to my audiobook number 2, entitled The Fort Knox Gold Scandal and What It Means to You. Finally, around February 1976, war is supposed to break out in the Middle East, to be followed by the Greater Asian War. Yes, my friends, this is what is going on. Meanwhile, our United States Congress is doing nothing whatever except playing games with you and me. Both the House and the Senate are packed with members who are totally ignorant of the big picture, intimidated by Rockefeller power, and weakened by skeletons in their own closets. Interspersed among them are the Hugh Scotts, the William Proxmires, the Henry Royces, and the Hubert Humphreys on both sides of the aisle and in both houses of Congress, who provide the active leadership to lead Congress and the nation down the primrose path being laid out for us by the Rockefeller brothers. My friends, only public opinion, massive, powerful, focused public opinion, will move Congress in the right direction. It is therefore up to us, you and me, our neighbors, our friends, to save our constitutional republic for ourselves and our children by becoming aware of the truth, spreading awareness of the facts to others, and focusing that awareness into such pressure on Congress that they will realize they must stop catering to the special interests dominated by the Rockefeller brothers. I hope to have more to say in this vein soon. But for now, use your own imagination, your own resources, and do what you can. The hour is late. Until next month, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.